Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Off the Ball Daily.
A home for your favorite podcasts from Off the Ball.
I live near Parnell Park now. Maybe I'll just support Dublin.
Yeah.
You know, through the prism of my children.
Poor old Will over there supports all the Midlands teams. He doesn't see borders.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
The Guinness Women's Six Nations Roadshow.
On Off the Ball.
Cheer them on, because the Six Nations isn't over. Visit drinkaware.ie.
ODB, we're live from the Camden, Dublin's premier sports bar and multi-purpose venue for an exclusive recording with thanks to Guinness. Get the facts, be drink aware, and visit drinkaware.ie. We chatted all things women's rugby and, of course, looked ahead to this weekend's final Six Nations game as Ireland welcomed Scotland to the Kingspan Stadium. I was delighted to be joined by former Ireland international Bernard Jackman and not one, not two, but 3 Grand Slam winners, Jenny Murphy, Nora Stapleton and Fiona Hayes.
You're very welcome. I'm sure it's nice to get a chance for you three anyway to meet up and reminisce. You get to do it often, but maybe not as much as you'd like, Jenny.
When we do, it'd be a bit of crack, but like we don't get to see some of the more responsible members of the panel as often as you'd like. There's some people over there as well that are equally as responsible. It's good crack because you got like plenty of really good memories that you can kind of sometimes chat about and reminisce like you're in nostalgia. But yeah, for the most part, it's good.
Yeah, is that a special thing, Fiona, when you've obviously achieved a lot with Ireland, with these girls beside you? That these are teammates you'll never forget and memories you'll never forget.
Yeah, like I personally love to tell them about how many times I beat them with Munster, but I suppose the old Ireland stuff does come up. But yeah, I think we met up a couple of times for Off the Ball. We did a show as well, and we'd forgotten a lot of things, and we were chatting, walking through Ashbourne on that day, and just the laughs and the memories and thinking about all those stupid little things. It's very rarely the game itself you talk about. It's, you know, what Jenny did or... generally, you know, with gooses and different things like that. We won't tell that story, but there's
so
always
much.
Lovely stories attached to that. But yeah, it's just that, those moments you love laughing about.
And Nora, for you, you need characters on a team, I would always think, to, you know, that you can remember moments, get to training and make it all that bit easier. I'm sure Fiona there beside you was one of them.
Both of them, thank God, and there's a few, yeah. You do need characters, like, and that's how you build culture and stuff like that on the team. And you need a bit of crack, and you know, someone else brings a bit of seriousness. And you know, without having a bit of a laugh on the pitch or more so off the pitch, you don't win anything, really, I don't think. So we were we had good fun. Yeah, we've always had good fun when we were playing for Ireland, and we still do when we meet up. Which we did recently, and that's all we have to say about that.
Did it sink in at the time, Jenny, what you had achieved, this historic day and historic moment, or was it maybe later on in life that you really realised?
No, we were absolutely freezing right after the game. It was like, I think Malloy got hypothermia, like genuinely got hypothermia. Like we were horsing back the limoncellos trying to keep warm. And there was like random like Irish music and violins being played in the middle like of outskirts of Milan and Paravaggio. And then when you're in it, you kind of... not take it for granted, you know, it's really special. Like that was the year for the first time that we ever beat England, and especially for some of the older girls, like, you could see just how much it meant to them. They'd been on the end of some like tough days against the Red Roses, and to get a win then was super special, and then to finish it off with doing something that the women's team has never done before. You kind of, it's only when you take a step back and maybe aren't playing as much, or you get a bit of time away because you got injured, so you have an opportunity to reflect, that you're like, oh, that was really, really special, and you don't want to take those moments for granted. And when you're in it, you want to try and tune it for a bit and like make sure you realize that you don't do something like that every day with the people that are alongside you. And yeah, and it's a really lovely game that we got to play with some really like good people, so being able to go back and do it again, not Grand Slam, but like get silverware is, no, it was really cool. And you'd still have like some great memories. Again, like Hay said, like off the pitch, they're the ones that are kind of sticking your head a little bit more than basically a bog pitch in Italy at the end of the tournament.
Yeah. Fiona, tell us about the conditions that day for people that might not know.
Yeah, it was absolutely freezing. It was, you know, as Jenny said, looking at Claire Malloy after the pitch or after the game, her tears were frozen almost on her face. She was so happy. And I was there, it was my first year, so I was thinking, God, this is easy, this Grand Slam business. That was fairly simple, and all the other girls crying, having stuck through it for years on the back of a lot of losses. So look, it was freezing, and you know, it's testament to the type of players we are as well, that the first thing everyone came off with, we were delighted, but we were also almost crying, saying that is the first televised women's rugby. Because it was pretty bad, wasn't it, Norman?
Yeah. No, we were just like, oh my god, like how did anybody watch that? We were kind of embarrassed. It was only, you know, the scoreline, everything, but obviously relieved. But I just remember my biggest memory was, it was so cold that when I was trying to catch a ball, I couldn't feel any of my fingers for the last, you know, end of the game or whatever it was. So I had to kind of just felt like the palm of my hands was catching. And I was like, I must look like such a dope here, trying to smother this ball and throw it to somebody. Like, and it was just an absolute mess. Like, but look, you come through them.
I remember those interviews. I don't know if they went around afterwards, but like the muck and everything as well. Like, it was just really tough, it looked like.
Yeah, and that's what they love to do. You know, when you're playing some teams, they like to bring you to the absolute worst hellhole of a pitch possible. And I suppose on the back of that win against England and France, we were playing some nice rugby, we had good backs, I suppose, and we were getting the ball out wide, you know, so
hold on, everyone just take note of the fact that front row Hayes has complimented the back. Oh my god, I'm privileged to even be here to witness that moment.
But yeah, so they actually, like, it's almost planned sometimes for teams when they want to slow you down. Back then, probably don't get away with it as much nowadays, but they take you to the absolute middle of nowhere, and the muck was up to the knees, wasn't it?
Yeah, but it was, I mean, beautiful the day before. Like, you probably got sunburnt like me, so I mean, it was, 20 odd degrees or something. Like, it was beautiful, and people kept talking about snow and the temperature drop, and you're a bit like running around in t-shirts and going, this is lovely.
No, it wasn't like that for the day. And to beat England on the way, like, Bernard, any Irish team that beats England, it's a good day, but for the very first time as well, it's pretty incredible.
Yeah, and I'd love to know, like, like, were you confident going into that game? Like, I know obviously you've been building, but you had a lot of setbacks and resilience and all that stuff, but was it a change in game plan, or did just things start to click? Because that was obviously a win for the ages.
You're trying to ask us about a game plan 10, 11 years
ago. No, was there something in the build-up, or was it just perfect storm, everything kind of clicked?
Do you know what? Well, one memory for me was that a couple of the girls were playing in England, you know, and I think you kind of looked at them and was like, well, they're playing with the English and against the English players week in, week out with their clubs. And I'm well able to manage them in training and, you know, when you're coming against them. So there was kind of that little bit of confidence growing, realizing that actually they're not this, you know, machine, white machine that are coming at you. And we were growing in confidence, yeah, through kind of a couple of years before that, obviously, we're building. I think, like, 2010, there was a massive exodus after the World Cup. So then you had players from 2011, 2012 build through. You had the whole train journey that I wasn't a part of in 2012. So you had started to build a really nice team together. And then we had some key leaders, I think, that kind of led a lot of that, like Fee, Joy, Lynn, were probably instrumental in that. And then you had others like Maz, suddenly you have 6'4", you know, you're able to put up 9. So there's just lots of really nice stuff came together. And I can't remember what the game plan was, and I was 10, so I don't know.
No, I think, and that Bernard as well, I think I wasn't there also, but I know in talking to a lot of the girls that train journey, and if people don't know, they basically were awake all night because they had to get a train journey. You were there, Eilish, were you? You were playing,
oh,
yeah,
it
Eilish.
Was grim times.
It was grim. Genius, so yeah. Someone eventually on the squad wrote a letter saying, so they stayed awake all night, got a couple hours of sleep, and barely lost to France in France. Yeah. So I think that moment they said, look what we can do. I remember Lynn saying it was so powerful, and something different happened. I obviously joined the squad the next year, but something else. I'm only joking. Well, something different happened, and there was just a belief from then on in, and they felt like people were backing them from the outside as well off the back of that journey.
It's funny, actually, just you know, Connacht won the Pro 14 in 2016, and they had a travel issue as well. Do you remember they got stuck in Russia. For a couple of days? They all had to fly back different ways, and they would say that that was a turning point for them, just that bit of a setback and their ability to kind of problem solve and come together. And it seems like I've often heard that train story, and maybe it was the tipping point that things got better from there.
You know? Yeah. Mm. Are you going to go up and hold up the train on the way to Belfast all this evening?
No, I'm not, Hayes. I'm a responsible human being with responsibilities.
And in terms of facilities and support back then, Jenny, just give us a little insight of what that was like, or maybe the lack of what that was like.
I think we had, like, I remember going in and being like really green and just thinking like, oh my God, this is amazing. Like, look at who I'm playing against. Like, started to figure out what the offside rule was and and like really just enjoy myself. And like, I think it was a really good culture to go in. That was what was special. It wasn't all the extra things. Now, like, we had an amazing management team that were very much on side and in that bubble with us as well. It was really cohesive. And, like, after the training, it was us versus everybody else. And that's an extremely powerful thing to be a part of. And then when it comes to facilities, we were playing in Ashburn at the time. I still think it's one of the nicest pitches I've ever played in Ireland. I've got some amazing memories there. And we just outgrew the place in a really lovely way. We got such support for people coming from all across the country to, and it kept on building. That was great. We stayed in like some, you know, like really nice hotels where, again, like the staff were very supportive. We were in Johnstone House in Rogenstown for a few years, and that was great as well. You kind of don't really pay attention to what you're missing out of, and you also have to pick your battles too. Like, there's some things that, yeah, we could have complained about, but also you kind of need to knuckle down and do the work yourself. So yeah, there was definitely things that would have helped, but also some of that, something's not getting everything that you want. Your back is against the wall and you're like, right, okay, we're going to show you, and we're going to rise to the occasion. Mm-hmm. And we did that. Like, we did that not just in 2013, but in 2014 in the World Cup, we were kind of underdogs in the group of death. And it was, again, like us versus everybody else. And going in with that kind of mentality is, it really worked to our advantage.
To me, that would strike me that you have to have a strong bond off the pitch then. Mm. Was that the case, Nora, that you were all good mates as well?
Yeah, I think we were. And like, we probably came from, you know, a couple of clubs as well. So we played with each other at a club, and you got to know each other. So you had a lot of good friends on the team. Yeah, definitely. Like, I think there's a bond, but it's more about respect and honesty. And I think if you can, like, we definitely had that as a group. We did a, I don't know if you remember, but a personality profiling piece. And
asshole.
But that was, I find that really useful. You find out more about yourself and like what made you tick and why you reacted in certain ways. But we're also then honest with one another as to, okay, Nora's behaving this way, that's because she's a blue, whatever. But you just began to understand one another more, and that if somebody was reacting in a certain way that you were getting annoyed about, it wasn't that they're being, you know, not nice. It was just they were stressed, or like they're having a bad day, or whatever it is. So I think we just, that built a lot more, as I said, respect and honesty, and you could work together on the pitch. So yeah, not everybody was the best of friends, I'm sure, like, but, and you were closer with others, but nobody didn't not like one another, I don't think, be fair to say. And as soon as you went on the pitch, you would do anything. You would put your head like in front of anybody's boot to to, you know, whether it was save a try, whatever it was, it didn't matter. And that did happen, and people got teeth knocked out and black eyes. And but you just were willing to put your body in the line for your teammates and to win at all costs.
And even with that, I don't have the best memory, but I just remember that personality test. I wouldn't have known you well, but I remember the only thing I've taken away from that was I'm the absolute complete opposite to Nora. Because I'm sitting beside her in the circle and I was like, oh, she was blue, whatever, I was green, red, or whatever it was, or yellow. And I was just like, that's all I remember is I am, she's here, I'm way down here. But
and what does all the colours mean?
It's just a personality trait, so Nora might be a little bit more organised than me. I might not be the most organised person, or just you go through all them and it takes you through different colours, have different loads. There's about a hundred, there's a lot of questions. Yeah, it was like with Steve Abu did it with us. And it was just brilliant because it was really empowering to see that we could be opposites, but I've such a respect for her. And, you know, I now know that if I was never late for meetings, but just say a little bit late for a meeting, you know, it would bother Nora. I know that. Like, I know that that's just part of her personality or whatever, just because I might show up with, you know, whatever time. So it's, you're more aware of people. And I never experienced anything like that. So I thought it was really powerful at the time. And, you know, Steve Abboud is very well known for how he affects people. And even like the few hours with us, it was just, I was absolutely blown away.
Yeah, that sounds so powerful. You're out in yourself here, Fiona, as well. Bernard, is that something you would have did in coaching or came across playing?
That was ahead of the curve because I remember Stuart Lancaster did it in Leinster in 2018 and it kind of went around the pro game going, wow, that's something a little bit different. I think sometimes coaches maybe are afraid to do it because you have to reveal your own personality as well. So from my memory of it, it's four colours. It's red, blue, yellow and green, isn't it? And reds are kind of this, like, drive, you know, Roy Keane, you would imagine, be a red or whatever. And then, but then some people are like a little bit of all of them. But the idea is, I think, that you understand yourself a little bit better and hopefully your teammates kind of know how to work with you to get the best out of you, isn't it?
Yeah, but then you also then understand how you can tap into the traits of the other colours. And look, I had to do a heap of that. I mean, when I went, put my first cap at Out Half for Ireland was the first time I'd ever played Out Half, like in club, I was centre.
That so, is I mean, crazy.
It is, it's a bit mad. And like it wouldn't happen now, thank God. But so I had to learn my trait and I had loads of help. I had Tanya inside me, Lynn outside me. It was great to have that. But I learned that I needed to be more red. I had to, because I would overthink calls. I'd have 10 different things in my head that I could do for this particular line out and this particular, and I'm there on the pitch and the forwards are looking at me saying, what's the call? And I'm like, that one. Do you know? But I'd be like, oh, but that's only maybe 80% right. And it's like, you're never going to make the perfect decision, be more red. And so then I had to learn to speed up the call, speed up decision making, be more direct with players around the pitch. And then ultimately that helped me kind of stay in that out half position going forward. So, but yeah, it just taught me how to tap into different ways of behaving, I think.
That's so interesting. And being aware that everybody's different. I think that's probably something really important in a team, that, you know, there's so many different characters. Everybody deals with things differently on and off the pitch. And I'd say that helped Fiona knowing then, okay, I know when Nora reacts like that or Jenny reacts like that, I know why.
Yeah, we all knew Jenny was a bit different, but it kind of really kind of cemented that as well. But yeah, no, it really did. And I felt like we all bought into it as well. When you sat down, I was a bit, I'll be honest, I was going, ah, here, lads, what's this about? You know, I'm after driving up through muck from Limerick and you're sitting down and people are trying to get into your soul. And I wasn't, I'm a bit better now on coaching, but as a player, I'd be like, here, get out of that. But look, it's everyone bought into it and it definitely changed even training and how you approach certain people, you know, because you might, and I value it a lot more now coaching. Because I'm very much into how my athletes perform and how I can get the best out of them. And it's got to do with their personality. So I might say to Jenny, that is absolutely terrible, Jenny. And I know Jenny's fine with that, but I might have to say something different to Nora because I've learned her that she won't take that in the correct way. Not correct way, but she won't take that. Whereas I can kind of massage maybe Nora's ego a little bit more. And I'm digging myself a hole here, but you know what I mean. It's just, it just made you realise, I'm going to leave it here now. It just made me realise how, you know, you really need to change how you talk to people, and especially on the pitch, it can work wonders.
Is that what makes a good coach nowadays, Bernard, that they can sort of change in and out of those sort of characteristics?
I think they have to, because the talent you're working with is changing. You know, they've got different needs, different wants, different expectations. So, and I think the people who've been in the game a long time have rolled, you know, with the punches and have moved on, because you have to work with the group you have, and that'll be different in terms of experience, talent, but also personality. So yeah, I think it's huge, you know. And you look at the football, Klopp, etc., Pep, they've managed, I know Klopp had a bad result last night, but in general they've managed to, I suppose, evolve with the change in generations.
And in terms of the respect levels in the game, did you feel back then, say 2013, 2014, 2015, you won again in the Six Nations, did you feel like you were respected as a team?
Yeah, I think it kind of grew. I probably didn't think about it too much. It was just when maybe there was, instead of being a small clipping in the paper, it was, you know, a little bit more detail. A little bit more specifics, then more people started coming to the games. We started getting, again, like more media attention. So, like, I think respect, that was one kind of area of it. And then another was just like we had like Joe Schmidt and Les Kiss come into training sessions before the 2014 World Cup. And that was huge. Like, we have, he's probably one of the best coaches in the game in general. And him taking the time, he was the first time a men's coach had come into training and actually, you know, there was others where he'd come and they'd gone for a jersey presentation, shook hands, and then like, see you later. And like, that in itself is grand, it's lovely. But actually, like, spending time with the team, going through drills, like asking questions, being very there and very present. It was lovely. And it was like, oh, this is like, we're being taken seriously. It's not a secondary afterthought as well. They're very much there, and they're like showing up to games during the World Cup. We like Joe Schmidt coming to a game in France. It's small things like that, but all those small things add up. And it kind of grew. Mm-hmm. You'd like the likes of, like, even at home where I'm from, it'd be predominantly like Gaelic football country. But like so many neighbours and like messages of support, like even now, like, oh, how's the knee, or you know, we saw you there, you didn't fault it up too much on TV. Like, nice stuff like that. Is it's on an individual level, but then also as a team level, I think it definitely grew. And a lot of it was probably there to begin with, but like, people weren't given the access to the game in the first place, or weren't aware of it. So it's not that we weren't given, it's just people didn't know that this was kind
it
of
wasn't
all
visible.
Yeah.
Mm.
And then on, like, from like the perspective, Ailish might remember this as well from other teams. I remember we were in Marcoussi, is that good pronunciation? Yeah, Marcoussi in France, which is the base of French rugby. And we'd obviously been there pre the World Cup, walking around, you know, and the French at the time wouldn't have been the friendliest bunch, you know, but you'd always have your gear on, you know, they'd just walk past you. And I remember we played and we beat the All Blacks, and we were all up early, everyone was buzzing the next morning, and we were going to breakfast. I don't know who I was with, there was a couple of us, and they were all like, oh, bonjour. So it was almost like, now you were respected. They really, it was a huge win for us, and it was like, okay, these guys mean business at this World Cup. It was actually huge. I remember we talked about it, we were like, geez, the French are all waving over at us in their jerseys and everything. But look, I think it's the big wins, and it's against big teams. The likes of France and England are doing it for years, so if you can beat them, there's a massive respect there for you as a squad. Yeah.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with privacy mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course, present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius, only you could find... Oh, there it is! Drawing board or...
Miro! All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
And how did it go from that level Nora, you get the hard question. To maybe, I suppose, dropping a level and everybody wondering what exactly has happened. We've seen, obviously, the contracts have been introduced and that's been positive and we've seen growth that way. But going from the level of Grand Slam wins to tough times, you could say.
God, right.
You're up.
Yeah, I think probably when we came, like the 2017 World Cup cycle obviously didn't go to plan. So we kind of all struggled with that one. And I think there was, it was more the subtle things that came in or maybe weren't offered to us as a squad. So like we'd gone from being able to really gel a squad and learning how important that is, say through 2013, 2014, then change of management. 2015, we still did okay. Like we did well, but we were definitely going through a transition. And then into 2016, how we were training changed. So we were getting like time at training. We were getting S&C and stuff like that. But when it came to training together, we didn't have overnights anymore as much and stuff. So that, I think, especially when you're not full-time athletes and you're not like in each other's pocket, like day in, day out, where you don't get to know the person. So we'd come together on a Saturday morning, train all day Saturday. Anybody based in Dublin would go home. You'd stay at home, go back to whatever, but you're kind of in, like you kind of, when you're playing, you have to get into that rugby mindset and you're just like, that's all you think about. And like, look, our partners kind of hate us for that period of time during Six Nations and World Cup because you're just so focused on rugby. You want to talk about it all the time. You want to analyze it all the time. You're trying to figure out how do we get better as a squad. So when you go home and you miss out on those nighttime banter, we used to do like make fancy dress costumes and team games and all these just weird stuff. But it got you to know people. You just really got to know people. So that was suddenly just gone for the kind of year and a half leading into that World Cup. So I don't think at the time, we didn't realize how important that was at the time. But I think reflecting back now, we had a squad of players, but we probably didn't have a squad of players who really knew and understood one another and knew how we ticked, like how to calm somebody down on the pitch or how to like get rid of nerves, all that kind of stuff. We didn't probably get that, and I think that had a massive impact then on our performance.
Yeah, and on that as well, I suppose the lack of them, of the Dublin people staying over, was got to do with not paying the money for them to stay over as well. So there wasn't funding there for that. And I suppose then when the World Cup, in what happened, the game was almost neglected then. And we feel strongly, we've spoken about this before, not getting into it, but club was neglected, and it just kind of stemmed from those little things. So we had that bond and we played for a different reason, whereas players were in there now with their sole goal to play just, you know, for Ireland. And I think that lack of funding, the connections, that going away, and eventually, I suppose, it's easy to say, look, why would we back that? Because it's not doing well. And it just seemed to, the funding, how the team was looked after, how squads were picked, the general game at home, like the grassroots rugby, wasn't being looked after. And it's shown now, I think.
Yeah, it's going to have a knock-on effect. And I suppose, Bernard, if you don't have that funding, facilities, you're going to see that out on the pitch.
Yeah, it's crazy because the hardest thing to do is light the fire, and then it should be a case of just keeping it stocked. And just from a different sport, I'm looking after Olympic sports now, and we're hoping to obviously medal in Olympics. But we have to have a plan for how we're going to capitalize on that afterwards, or else it'll be lost. You know, and I would say from the outside that we did lose the opportunity to build on the success that this team had, and it was an absolute shame. And but I suppose now it's, what are we going to do now to give the Irish women's team the opportunity to be successful again, but have a plan to capitalize on that, you know? And that's obviously very difficult because the environment is, the competition at the moment is pretty hard. But that's what needs to be done, you know, is to support them, give them support, so they can do it again, and then obviously capitalize on that, so we never get this big dip again.
I also think on that as well, it's like, don't set the bar low. I think one of the workers, it was like to come in like top five or like something, top eight, and you're kind of like, the last World Cup we came in top four. Why are we being what are we kind of trying to underachieve? It's sometimes the lack of ambition and like proper gunning for something that it, like a goal is meant to be really tough to hit, but you're meant to try and reach for it as opposed to being like, oh, well, like it'll do. Mm-hmm. Like all those it'll do's add up to like a lack of care in the end. And the lack of care has got like, you know, probably we don't have the player depth that maybe we could have if there was like proper frameworks in place so that, you know, when girls are deciding what sports they want to play or parents are deciding like, will we go for Gaelic or rugby or whatever, you want to make the choice as easy as possible for them to go down to their local rugby club to play, because it all comes to hopefully potentially of the thousands that do play, there's a few in there that have the potential to be excellent in a green jersey. And the more you diminish the numbers at that rate, that the less likely we can have of like absolute superstars mm-hmm. playing in the Six Nations and tearing it up week after week.
Yeah, this is it. It's the grassroots and it's the clubs, you know, that's where it starts. Fiona, you would be involved in coaching. Do you feel at club level that you see, I suppose, prospects and there's a good buzz or?
Yeah, there's a low down in Munster, right? not being seen. No, I'm only messing. Look, I think the standard of the game
she always gets in that Munster line.
No, I do think the standard of the game is absolutely excelled. And yes, we're a little bit slow behind, but I feel like the players are there. Maybe the game awareness, but I think that's, I could be wrong, Bernard, but is that a problem? Like, we would have all watched rugby. I would talk to my team now, and a lot of them don't watch rugby. And if you're not playing it and watching it, you're only going up to, you're an athlete, yes, but it's very hard to catch up and be up at the races.
And it's a big issue for the pro academy coaches, senior teams, because effectively a lot of people now just watch a game in the highlights and you don't see how you exit a scrum 5 yards from your own line. That's not on your highlights video. You don't see how you win that kick battle. So they're trying to be creative and trying to send them little clips, asking them to go and work out why these things happen, but they're not watching full games. You know, back as kids, we would have sat down and watched maybe 2 Six Nations games, 5 Nations games or whatever, back to back, and you watch the whole game. And you watch maybe the analysis afterwards and you understand why a try was scored or why a try was conceded, whereas now it's just TikToks and Instagram, and it's great. But so they're getting to see, but they're not seeing the whole picture. So as a coach, it's trying to educate them on, as you say, game patterns, game understanding, and it's not simple.
No, but it's definitely, there are brilliant players out there, even like, you know, I'd coach against Jenny's team and stuff, and there's some absolute gems there. It's just they're coming to the game with a lot less, I think, understanding of the game. So that might be neglected because they're being pulled up, say, to a high level, and it's going into that cauldron. So you need results as a coach. I need you to do this. But their understanding of like little basic things, when it goes wrong, then it's very hard to have to go back to that. So when it's right, and in Ireland there's some absolutely, like, not picking anyone in particular, but Parsons absolutely burst onto the scene, was so good, so exceptional, and she was quite young. But I suppose now it's kind of, the game has gone so physical, so detailed, that maybe some of that game awareness that you might have skipped over for natural talent, you might be seeing that it's not there now, and they're having to work with it. And she will absolutely excel in a couple of years again, I think. But it's funny, we would have got away with it probably back then, when we played, but now the game is so detailed, so structured. We see how good England are, how France, how physical it is. It's moved on another level. So if you don't have the game awareness, it's very hard to work on that.
I think though, like, you have to be fair to a young group of players. So like after we retired, like there's a young group there, and they had to shoulder so much responsibility, because we put rugby on TV, you know, and suddenly you have people who recognise rugby, want to read about it and care about results. You have radio stations yourselves, like, who are talking about results all the time. And then when the results start getting bad, you have young players, or you have one or two senior players who are left taking all that responsibility on themselves. So they're having to deal with all the pressure from media. They're trying to big up the players underneath who are getting their first
first cap in a massive Six Nations game or a World Cup qualifier that you then lose and you don't qualify. You know, so it's trying to keep all that together. And I think like that's really difficult. And then you have to remember that we haven't had the under 18 and under 20 structures that the other teams have. So like those are in place now and you have to give them time. So while we can talk and say, geez, like it's so bad, but at least they're now in place. Yeah. So if you have girls who are getting their first match against England as a 17-year-old or as a 19, 20-year-old, whatever it is, then you start to grow up with your opposition and you start to compare yourself to them. So then the next time you go out against them at under-20s, you want to be better than the English or the French fullback or whoever it is. So you're already used to playing against them and there's not that shock that you get when you run into Twickenham for the first time in front of 40,000 and it's loud and it's high and you can't hear anything. And like when we did it that time, it was like we lost that game too, you know what I mean? So like I think like that's like the last, just out the weekend, I mean that was performance anxiety, that was just completely overwhelmed. That's not them as a group. And so hopefully they'll regroup this weekend and do a job. But I think we just have to remember that the structures are coming in place and you have to have those people been exposed to matches at a high level before they get their first cap against England or whoever it is.
I think you also have to look at, like, I was really lucky that when I came into the squad and was really young, on either side of me was very experienced players. So I was going in and playing alongside, it was... Lynn Cantwell was playing 10 because Nora was injured, and then Nee Briggs is at 13. Like, they were near plus 30, plus 50 caps. And a lot of the girls now, when they're getting their first caps, they're going into really key positions, whether it's like across the park, and they're looking at their experienced player alongside them who's got 10 caps. It's like a completely different ball game. So, like, I had the opportunity and the space and the safety net to make my mistakes in a game and get coached in the game to be like, that's not good enough, get up or move here, or do this. And you've got girls that, through no fault of their own, haven't been able to build up caps or haven't got, you know, an opportunity to get under 20s, under 18s. So comms is probably not as strong as when we were there in some respects. There's not as much experience either. So you're kind of like, you're chucking a lot of them in the deep end and hoping that they're going to swim. And they are, but like, you're going to be swallowing a little bit of water first before you can kind of like fully get going, essentially.
Yeah, Bernard, that's a good point. Like, even if you'd look at the men's game, if you're throwing a load of players that are making their debuts in the Six Nations, you know, if they weren't up with players that are the likes of James Gibson Park, Caelan Doris, all these players that have loads of experience beside them, you know, that's so hard. And I do think that must have been a really hard aspect, definitely last year when we've seen a lot of the girls coming up for the very first time.
Yeah, and like, it's not just the inexperience, which is obviously a huge thing. It's cohesion. Mm-hmm. So if you look at, why does Andy Farrell pick so many Leinster players? Obviously, they're really good players, but they're used to playing together. And that benefit follows through to the national team. And that's obviously something that maybe we're struggling with. But I think if you look at how athletes are normally developed, and I'll get too technical, but like, you have the outliers like Usain Bolt, everything is easy for him, he's just a gifted athlete. But most athletes tend to have had a period where they've been competing with people they're the same level as, okay? A period where they've been stretched, like they're out of their comfort zone massively, and a period sometimes where they've actually been better than the opposition or better than their opponent. And the three of those together kind of give you the tools you need to compete. And when I look at this Irish team, like against France, theoretically, on paper, they should have been out of their comfort zone massively, but they put in an unbelievable performance. The following week, I actually think they were better than Italy. Maybe the pressure of having to to beat them, the big crowd and all that stuff, they made a lot of errors, they lost. The week after, we didn't really have huge expectation for them. I didn't anyway, because I wasn't sure they could bounce back from that. They beat Wales easily. Then you go to England and it's just, I'd say, that performance anxiety, being up against a team who were just locked and loaded. And now hopefully we get, you know, a bounce now, and we get, I think we're playing a team probably on paper we're level with.
Yeah.
And hopefully the four matches we've played so far have kind of given us what we need to win. And then I think it's a real positive championship, I think. And that sounds, I don't mean like it's two wins, but where we were coming from, it's a big step forward.
Yeah.
Definitely. Like in that first game against France, Nora, you could see the difference, you know, even in the handling of the ball, the awareness, no more players were, you could see that they're training like professionals. Obviously the contracts have come in, so they're in there, you know, in the setup, and you could see it on the pitch then.
Yeah, well, I think it's like defensively, you know, they were real solid units, you know, they understood one another, working inside, outside. Like, it was hard for France to break through, I think. And then you saw glimpses in attack, but, you know, they didn't really have the ball. They were just trying to clear the lines and turn France. And look, that's sometimes what you have to do with France. They hate having to go back, get the ball and come at you again. Like, they just want to be the team on top and just keep going at you, keep going at you. Win a penalty, kick for touch, maul it over, whatever it is, or get a missed tackle. So I think Ireland showed heaps of promise there. Like, they had a massive improvement. And we all thought that would continue. The Italy game, I think, I'm not sure if that's where then experience comes in, where the first was 10 minutes, it was all Ireland, it was, you know, and you could see, like, did they think this was going to be an easy day? Whereas you needed someone there to be like, get your head back in the game, you know, this is Italy, they'll get a quick tap and they'll run the length of the field and scored, and, you know, similar tries happen. So I think the lack of experience and just knowledge and people knowing, like, when to calm a game down, when to just, like, let's go long, get it out of here, being able to manage that on the pitch, I think really showed against Italy, and just some basic errors and things like that as well. So yeah, like, I think you can see that there's change coming in this team, and the key thing is they need to keep the team together. I think players left in the past because it was a difficult environment, it was difficult to handle all the pressures, and some of your key captains stepped away for different reasons, whereas if they can keep this group together, I believe the culture is much nicer, I believe they get on really well, they like the coaching staff, I think, like, there's all the right ingredients in place now to allow them to try and flourish and to get better. And hopefully we start to see that now, starting with this weekend. I mean, it's a big if, but imagine if they did come third and they're holding a qualification sign.
Yeah.
I mean, they'd be very lucky, but wouldn't that be absolutely amazing? And it's achievable. And, like, I think that is what they're going out there to try and do this weekend. But on the flip side, they lose by a certain number of points and they end up sixth. Like, that's an absolute disaster. And suddenly you're playing, what is it, Spain or something, and you're thinking back to the last time they're trying to qualify, and it's like, geez, there's so much promise, and then something like that could happen because they don't have the knowledge and the experience just to settle a game when you have to pick the right decision, all of that.
It's fine margins. It's so, so tough. But I think getting the win against Wales, that was a big moment. You could almost see the relief after so long to get a win, to experience a win, Musgrave, everything. Just, it was a real moment, it felt like, Fiona.
Yeah, and it was brilliant for those players because they put in a huge performance as well. You know, they were probably really disappointed, as Nora said, with Italy. They were very happy with their defensive effort against France, I know, in talking to a few of them. And then they were able to have a bit of both. They had really good defence, really good attack at times against Wales. Yes, there was errors and, you know, I suppose a couple of areas didn't go well for them. Before, and I felt even last year, they would have kind of gone down a bit of a hole in that and getting caught up. But they seem to have the mental ability, whatever that coaching staff has kind of instilled in them, to just bounce back next job. And they were moving around. They knew Wales were tiring and really went after them with speed as well. I mean, if you look at the stats, we actually have the quickest speed of ball, like 0-3 rucks out of all the teams in the Six Nations. Yes, it might be frantic at times, but it's actually shown what they are trying to do. They're trying to speed up the game, and I think, to be fair to them, their fitness has been excellent. It took a lot of out of them, Wales. They probably didn't understand that, and we saw defensive errors then when they went to Twickenham, and I think it was just a little bit of tiredness in their shape, because especially I think out wide they were getting caught. That hadn't happened against France, so that's not the system that they're playing. It was just little errors creaking in like that through tiredness, and they learn from that. And if they can fix that going into next week, I think they have a very, very good shot. And finishing third, it would be absolutely immense. Qualifying for the World Cup, brilliant. But then they'll be up playing with the big guns in WXV1. So that'll be tough going as well. But look, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, getting the win against Wales and then, I suppose, going to the low of the performance against England. How do you bounce back now? Like, it's a tough thing to do when you go from one to the other.
I think I think the fact that they have a game to end on is massive. If you're ending on an England game, you'd be kind of marinating in misery for a while, just like stewing in, and like no one wants to be on the receiving end of an 88 scoreline. I think they just like they address you're like, here, listen, that wasn't good enough, both at an individual level and as a team level. There are certain standards that they would have set, whether it's coming to like their defensive systems, but also like huge amount of individual errors, particularly around the tackle, like 63 missed tackles in that game. Yeah. Like that is too big of a number to be leaving with. So like that needs to be fixed. Lick their wounds, and then you just on a Monday morning you do your video reviews and you look forward to Scotland. You're like, okay, well, like this is an opportunity at redemption. This is an opportunity at getting that third playoffs, that third spot, and potentially like on that qualification. It's huge. So listen, this is the game that they need to win, and then afterwards they can kind of look back at it in terms of bouncing back. It's like being honest with themselves. And then, like, what are the things that we can control now, and what can we do? And then, like, it's the coaching staff and each other. If they seem like a tight-knit team, you build each other up in a way that, like, you know, that, like, say it's, I know, like, if Nora was having not the best game or not the best training session, how it would approach her would be completely different to if Hayes was having a bit of a mare. So, like, having that, she's not having a mare.
She's not happy
now.
About that.
it's all those little kind of small little micro kind of conversations and chats that are having, and just caring about each other, and then just coming on and doing your job and getting business end stuff done and dusted, and a few scoops after as well.
Yep. Can I tell you what Jenny did once for me? This is how helpful she is. It was really windy and I needed somebody to hold the ball. So off to kick and tee. So she put down there and she just looked at me and was like, you're shit. You're effing shit. You're so shit. You're so, so shit.
It was an international game though, was it?
It was club game.
Oh yeah.
Okay, it was an easy enough kick and it went over, but that's the type of teammate.
That's what you need.
I mean, I don't know if I needed that type of abuse when I tried to kick the ball.
Did you get the score,
Nora? You're rose, you're Asian.
Yeah.
And do you think that it helps then having it at home, Kingspan? It's nice to get the fans behind you. That's always an extra percentage.
Hopefully. Hopefully people will travel, and I don't know what way the weather is and stuff. Is it meant to get wet? Probably. It's arrogant. I believe like ticket sales are going really well.
Yeah.
But it always is nice. Like I obviously work out in Sports Campus, so I saw them there yesterday, so it's nice that they're able to be in their home environment, you know, and with their training facilities that they're used to and their structures and things like that. And I'm sure then, like, for some of the Ulster girls, it'd be lovely to be able to play with more home fans around you as well. And it's always nice to kind of play in your home turf, like in Ulster and stuff, if that's for them. So I think home advantage is really important, if even just for not having to go through travel, staying in whatever hotel room and things like that there, and like always moving about the place, unsure of where you're going to do your training session, what's that facility going to be like, is it going to be a proper pitch, have you brought the right boots, like all that, at least when you know the setup. There's just so many other concerns that you don't have to factor in.
I think when you're trying to work out, will they bounce back from England, you look at the reasons they would is that they've had a victory recently, which is massive for that team, because obviously if you keep losing, it's hard to really have belief. Yeah. So they've beaten a team that potentially they weren't sure they could, beat them convincingly. They seem to have a really good spirit. There seems to be a happy squad. The feedback about the coaches is good. It's clear that they have systems, so they have an attacking system, and it worked really well against Wales. It actually stretched Italy a lot, just couldn't nail the final pass. Defensively against France, you could take some real positive of that we have a good defensive system. And the fact, I think it's on, you know, Fiona mentioned the speed of ruck ball, you know, the 4G is a help for that. So they've won in Virgin Park on a 4G, and now they go to Ravenhill. So like there's lots of reasons why you would hope that they can actually walk out to that pitch going, yeah, we can
feel
win
confidence.
This.
Yeah,
absolutely. And who do you think has really stood out for Ireland? There has been some really standout players, like some stars are really arising.
Yeah. Well, Aoife Wafers kind of, yeah. I suppose, your talking yeah. point, isn't it? Yeah, no, and do you know what? She is a really nice person. I think I feel like I keep coming back to like the type of person you have to be as well and how that adds to your playing ability. But when we went over and watched him in France, I don't think she really knows us. I mean, she would have been an absolute kid when we were playing and stuff. So there was a few of us there who travelled over to the game, and she came over on her own after the game. You know, and to say thanks for coming. So you're just kind of looking as like there's something in that player. Like she's going to be good. So absolute amazing. I think she's a really bright future ahead of her. So hopefully she can just keep growing into that role and just keep getting better and better. Others, I think Aoife O'Reilly has been a really nice surprise. You know, I was unsure when she came in, but. I mean, you talk about the speed of the ball. Like, I think she's really getting to it fast. And her pass is nice as well. You know, like, as anybody receiving a pass, you don't want to have to stop and readjust your line or catch it up here or down at your feet. And she just seems to be consistent with that pass. Like, so, look, I think, yeah, definitely this year you're starting to see players who are being talked about and are standing out in the team. And that's what it's all about. And I remember... talking to one of the players, just kind of one-on-one and had a chat with her, and I remember saying, like, you need to want to stand out as a player. Like, you're playing for Ireland, you shouldn't be satisfied that you're the best player in Ireland, so you're getting picked in this position. You want to be, you know, talked about by the opposite team as well. You want England and France and having to talk about you in their team meetings because they're worried about what you bring in the pitch. And I think we're starting to see some of that as well.
Yeah, and I'm usually impressed with Linda Zhugang this year. She's been kind of around a while. I suppose I've watched her grow with Belvaux at club level. I think I even played against her a couple of games. And, you know, I always knew she had it in her. But I think this season in particular, I've been really watching her, not just at scrum time. I think her work rate is absolutely gone through the roof. Her carries, her footwork around the contact area, I think they've actually changed something with that, because she used to be very direct before, whereas now she's finding those soft shoulders, trying to get through and looking for a few offloads. But Linda and Christy as well in the other side of the scrum definitely has improved hugely. And you know, they went from going backwards in a lot of games last season, so there's something really tightened up there. And I feel like in watching them, they're not even using as much energy as they would have been in the past. They're now concentrating on sinking, getting the body position, not going after opposition all the time, making good decisions around that. Whereas I felt like in the previous years, they were just going, wasting so much energy at scrum time, whereas they're nailing it, and now they're flying around the pitch as well. So it's really good to see her coming into a bit of form as well. And as I said, Christy. But and you spoke about Wafer. She was brilliant. And just someone as well, like, we just saw the impact Sam Monahan has had on the game. So she missed last week, I think, with an issue, undisclosed or whatever, but she's back in again. It just absolutely blew me away when I was doing a bit of review and stats that she'd missed the first game, played the next two games, and she'd missed one full game and was still the highest ball carrier in the tournament. She was on 44 carries, so it just shows how much Ireland use her. And she tightened the line out a little bit when she came on as well. Obviously that's not at 100% or up in the 90s where you like it, but she's someone who gets them going. She's trying to bring speed around that area, so she's someone who's massively important to this squad. Would have loved to seen her playing the whole Six Nations. She probably would have been in with a shot of making, you know, the team of the tournament, because she has that ability, you know. And I don't know if we'll touch on it, but she's someone I could see potentially going on and challenging for a position on the lines, Tori. Mm-hmm. She's someone who's got that real X factor, and is growing as well. She hasn't been around the game for a long time.
No, she would have been predominantly a GA player. I played with her for years. She's unbelievable, but she always was that leader. And like, she was so late into the game as well, which is crazy. So now when you hear about her, you're like, she's one of the main players. She easily could go on to the Lions. That's probably a good segue. The Lions, this is a real opportunity for women now in rugby, that this could be an opportunity, Jenny, for them.
Like, at the moment, it's probably a difficult one, because when you're thinking of line selection, we're talking about like Sam Monahan could get a selection, is definitely putting up her hand. We need to see more of her. But like,
it's looking like it'll be predominantly England at the moment. And fair enough, that's very much deserved.
Yeah.
They're stellar across the park from back three right up until the front row. And you don't want that either. You kind of want one of the things that's so special about the Lions is the combinations of different like players, the best from each coming together and playing against some of the best teams in the world. I think at the moment, I'm not too sure how it would work, but you know, there's so much history behind it as well. It would just be a tricky one to see how it kind of comes into fruition and what are the long-term benefits potentially of something like that. Is it just purely, well, the men are doing it, let's copy and paste and do something similar? I'm not too sure, but I think like more rugby in the calendar is never a bad thing either.
Yeah, it's always a positive, but there's reservations around it. Nora, how do you feel?
Well, no, I'd be more around the positive, like, because I think anything that is progressing the game is a positive. I think it opens up new pots of funding. You know, that's the key thing, whether it's TV, revenue, sponsorship, whatever it might be. And that then gets reinvested back into the game, because ultimately the more money that can go into the different unions to establish really strong, like, pathways under 18, like Irish teams under 20s, build out the work that they get. And then, you know, you're working on whatever that competition looks like for those players outside of international duty. I think anything that can add funding to that is a real positive. And like the Lions has heaps of history, but they wouldn't do it if they didn't have a financial plan behind it. Like they wouldn't, you know, these are really smart business people who are doing this for pure business reason. Like, so I don't think they're doing it because it's a nice or the right thing to do. I think there's a business decision behind it as well and a business model behind it. So they see the benefit and the potential in the future of starting it, and they've been planning it for quite a while now.
Yeah, I think the benefits obviously are you could inspire, you won't just inspire the current internationals in England, Wales, Scotland and France, or in Ireland, but you may inspire people who have never played the game. But I know from, again, going back to the men, so O'Gar, like traditionally England used to be the dominant side in the men's game as well. And O'Gara went, when Johnny Wilkinson was obviously the number 10, it was nearly all English players in terms of the starting team. And he said what he learned from Wilkinson, what he learned from the coaches, he brought back and brought to Munster and then brought to Ireland. Do you know what I mean? So that could be, if we only had four or five on it, but if they could actually say, well, look, actually we're not far ahead, or whatever it was that they picked up to come back to make sure that the next time we went around and we had more, it'd be a good thing. But I think the funding as well, the funding is split four ways, so it could drive money back into the game here. It's worth trying, I think. But it's definitely something with a huge amount of history.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you have the Champions Cup has been talked about as well for 2026 to have a Champions Cup. Would you like that, Fiona? Your eyes have widened.
I'm like, start out the local league first, will you?
No, I think that's absolutely brilliant. Imagine, you know, the best clubs in France, England. It's just, where does it come from this side? Is it a Celtic Cup? Do we get a URC up and running? Is it like the top of the provinces? So, you know, I do think that's a brilliant idea. And it's like, you know, you said, when you start playing against these players, and the both of you kind of alluded to it, it's that fear factor goes, be it at underage. So if you get another crack at, say, playing Saracens or, you know, Gloucester, and you're playing against those English players or playing over in France against those French players, I think it just lessens that fear factor. And with games like that, you may make that absolute step up to international level and can only just build the game. And that's what we want. We want the game getting better. I don't want to be sitting here in 3 years, you know, on TV talking about, should we change the format of the Six Nations? Yeah. Like, I love the Six Nations. I love everything about it. I grew up with it. It absolutely breaks my heart to even hear the talk around that. So, you know, I think with club games like that, the more we invest, the more we get behind these players at home, same in Welsh unions, Scottish unions, I think the gap will be narrowed, because, you know, Ireland is a rugby country. Like, we people, it's just about building it now and trying to get, I hope it's not too long, but it's definitely going on the right track.
Yeah, it's bridging that gap, Jenny. Like, England, they're great, and all plaudits to them. We just have to get to that level. You know, you can't give out that they're that good.
No, I think, they've...
that's the bar that's been set, and it's not up to them to like to slow down or suddenly go into third gear. It's up to the other unions to kind of catch up. And you can look at, like, you know, England have a lot of things going their way in terms of they've got, like, you know, really strong player numbers. They've already got, like, a lot of clubs in place in terms of the men's game that they can use facilities. So you've got the likes of Gloucester, Saracens, and all coming together. So huge playing numbers. The system's already set up. And it's, like, again, like, really strong filter systems going through. So everyone is very much on the same page. And like Fee was mentioning as well, it's like the jump to the next stage isn't as daunting and it isn't as wide as what we're currently asking this crop of Irish players to do as well. In terms of how you kind of go about it, there's not like one silver bullet thing that's going to be a quick fix. It's a lot of it is like, it needs time to grow. It needs that investment in place. You want to be able to give players as much opportunity as possible to play as much games as possible. We spoke earlier about, like, when we were talking about the English team, you had girls that are starting and have started nearly every game in the Six Nations playing club 2 weeks before Six Nations was going. Ireland, we've not been doing that in terms of, like, how many games have some of these players played, like 15 games this year. It's probably under double digits, which is then you're asking players to suddenly be able to manage a game, and it's really hard. So it's like, give them more opportunities to play, to mess up at a stage that's not Twickenham. Loads of those things. I think I'm veering a little bit there, but that's what I think anyway.
Yeah, and to have that experience as well. One player that we haven't mentioned is Cliona Maloney, the long-awaited return of Cliona. Fiona, what was your reaction to hearing that she was coming back?
Yeah, about time. Look, I've back in form.
Back in form.
I've watched her. She was terrible over in England, which is a lie. Look, her. It's just, I watch the game. I love the game. I watch any rugby I can see in front of me, and I've watched the Prem, and you know, some of the games over there are absolutely immense, and I'm watching Cliona come out with player of the game this week, player of the game the next week, and just a real workhorse. And whatever, like, we all know something went on, and you know, the slurry comment and whatnot, but look, you've got to park these things. And I always think this, and Bernard might agree, the sign of a good coach is how do I mend this all together? How do I get these people, like, if I'm a coach and someone is saying, okay, I don't want them, I'm like, how? I want them to be able to fit into my system. Or, you know, that's the joys of being a coach, being able to get these players in there, see how they flourish. And I suppose that's what we didn't see. We haven't seen it, and her form is brilliant. And you know, we talk about that, but it's the experience she brings. We've played with her. She's around that length of time at scrum time. She's absolutely superb. She will pass her knowledge on. And you know, the line out hasn't been great, so Niamh Jones in particular is, I would start her every game. I think she is absolutely outstanding. But imagine on the 60 minute mark, you're able to bring on someone like Cliona Maloney, who has that experience, who's able to calm things down. You know, we'll talk about Scotland next week. If it was a tight game, how brilliant would it be to get her out there? Her experience, her ball carrying, we didn't see in that first game back, but when she came on against England, she caused absolute destruction in a couple of carries. So she's someone who wants to be sprung into action as well. So it's exciting, and yeah, definitely about time for me.
Yeah, she's savage, Bernard. And I suppose speaking up should never come at a cost.
I actually think hopefully it's the last sign that we've turned a corner. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? I've been doing punditry on the women's game for the last 5-6 years in particular. And you know, you could maybe on air, it wasn't always like put a brave face on. Some people are really passionate about it, but behind the scenes you can see they were nearly broken. And I think, you know, obviously reached a bottom level with the letter and the bravery it took to just, like in France you say, spit in the soup. You don't spit in the soup, but like basically people who cared about the game did put their hand up. And from there it's got, starts to look like it's getting better. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's not perfect, and but you have some chance of actually turning around if people are pointing in the same direction or supporting it. And I'd like to think that the Cliona decision to come back in is kind of the icing on the cake, and that what's happened in the past is finished. and now we're going to do what's best for Irish women's rugby. And she is brilliant. But I think we've got two really good hookers now, and that's what we want. We want to have two, three, four in each position. But it's a good start.
Absolutely. So we might do our top three players of all time. Have you did your homework?
Oh, jeez.
Who wants to go first? Jenny, you're up.
Oh, for God's sake. Okay, so the question was the Mount Rushmore. Okay, so I was thinking about it. I was like, they were like, okay, so I'll go Lynn Cantwell first. I think stellar player. Learned so much from her. Most capped women's Irish player of all time. Locked in. Second one I'll pick, and I'll say it to her face, do I think she's one of the best loose head props in the world? Probably not. But is she one? Has she like done so much for Irish women's rugby and been a part of the success and kind of setting the foundations of what, like, this is what a high performance team looks like before we were a high performance team? Fiona Coughlin. And then even though Ailish is standing like pretty much right there, so I'm not going to mention her, I will have to say that there is players that have gone before me that I don't know enough about because there's no footage, and so you'll hear like older players talk about them, but like I just haven't been exposed. So I know there's like the Sarah Jane Belto, you talk about like Fiona Reid, all these kind of greats. But for me, the final person, and she's going to absolutely love it, is Ali Miller. Side of a Mountain. Yeah.
Ali will love that.
Yeah,
she will love it.
Go ahead, Fiona.
I actually forgot to think about that, so it's very off the cuff here. Look, I agree with some of them, but I from what I've played and what I've watched, you can't not talk about Claire Malloy, who has just been immense. We know she froze herself in Italy, but just in general, she's been through all those years, and she's just a player who's consistently brilliant in every game as a seven. She's absolutely outstanding and still playing way over in England. She just is like a machine. So she's someone that I've always looked up to as a prop who always wanted to be a back row, you know, so I always looked up to her. But she's definitely somewhere. Playing ability, Lynn Cantwell. So good. So small. She definitely get a few people yellow and red cards these days. I think the height of her, you know, she was so hard to tackle and just really hardy as well. Like, just when you watch the game now, sometimes obviously she's starting her journey, but I Aoife Dalton sometimes I'm looking at her. It's a similar type of build, similar type of footwork. But it just when you watch someone and you think of someone else, I always think they're a legend, because if they come into your head straight away, there's someone who's stuck with you on your journey. And I'll be honest, I'm not even joking, I've played against her and with her, and one of the best tight heads in the game I've ever seen was Ailish Egan. She's sitting down there.
Come on, Ailish.
So yeah, look, it's I suppose if you're in the scrum, you understand the work of a tight head. She was a bit lazy around the pitch now, but she was in a time of when her scrum was absolutely solid. The French English couldn't get anywhere near it. Ailish was the anchor of that scrum in games, and just really, really good for Irish rugby. And I always have to include a prop, and Fiona Coughlin annoyed me last week, so she's knocked out.
Poor Fiona.
I got caught. The names have been said, so probably the first one is Lynn, just because she taught me so much when I came into the squad as a night half. Like, she was out for the first year, she was outside me pretty much making the calls. The second year she probably was like, I'll let Nora make the call first and then decide if it's good enough, and that's how it worked, and like we kind of molded into it. But it was just nice to kind of earn her respect as well through it. I think she's still contributing massively as well, and will do in the future. So she would definitely be on it for me. Then I also think Fiona Coughlin.
I know, girl.
I think like she was a big factor in why we were as successful as we were. Like, she was first on training field, last to leave it. She just drove standards, like, and she was so key to all that as well. And she would challenge management, and, you know, like, she would call it out when it wasn't good enough or when we hadn't trained hard enough. And I sometimes wonder now, do the current teams that we've seen over the last 5 years, have they had that kind of confidence to be able to sit down and have those conversations with management and really be honest with them, and to be respected by the management as well? But I think Fiona had that, as others. And then I might just give a few honorary mentions, if that's because I deserve.
That is cheating.
No, but I think, like, Joy hasn't been mentioned.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Joy was, like, she... if you kind of go back through those years, but I mean, I was always so impressed with Joy on the pitch, like, and I just thought she was one of the most skillful players that I've ever played with, and so important to, like, a lot of the big wins as well. And I think it's a pity that she didn't maybe go on a year or two, but, you know, she, I always just thought, like, she was such a solid player, and then now what she's done as well from a rugby perspective, yeah, absolutely key. And just another mention as well, I think Briggsy was, like, she's won so many games for Ireland, and as in, like, her boots, and some of the tries that she scored and things like that. Like, she was phenomenal fullback. But my third person goes to Claire Malloy. Like, she would turn a game for us, like, her breakaways. She was given a license to do whatever she wanted to do, and we'd have to go with her. But she also saved my back on numerous occasions, as that seven covering my inside shoulder and making all those tackles that maybe I wasn't quite a good enough speed bump for. But she was just a fantastic player on the pitch. And the number of steals, everything, her tackle count, her fitness. She was always one of the fittest players on the pitch. So that would be my third.
Amazing. That was five, but we let you away. All right, Bernard.
I'm going to stick to three. I think Fiona Coughlin, so my club was Clontarf, so she would always be up watching, and then we'd watch her. I have a bias towards people I know, and then especially when they do well, you kind of follow them closer. So Fiona, obviously, is a leader. Phenomenal what she did. Claire Malloy, when I was coaching in Wales, I'd often be in the airport coming back to Ireland, and she'd be there, like, having done, like, a crazy shift. Sitting there, like, looking at footage on her phone, and then I'd watch her on a Saturday and just putting her body, like, on the line, just ridiculous commitment. Obviously, on and off the field, she brought that. And then Ali Miller wouldn't be that far from me at home, and we went up to Marcoussi for the World Cup, and whenever I saw her play, I just thought, like, get her the ball in space, and she's going to do something special. So they're my three.
Oh, brilliant. Enjoyed that. So we'll finish on a prediction then for this weekend, Ireland-Scotland. Jenny, how do you think it's going to go?
I think it's going to be a tough game, but, like, we'll just see how, like, cohesive and together this team. It's going to be tough to bounce back, but I do think Ireland can get the win. We're at home. They're building something. They're progressing the right way. Ireland by 7 points.
Oh, nice. Fiona?
I'm going to say Ireland are going to bounce back. I think this team have something special and real X-factor players that probably be disappointed in how they performed. You know, we spoke about Wafer and a few others. Dana has the ability to change a game when she's in that type of form. She's young and learning, but she's someone who can really, with her boot, turn a game. So I'm going to say Ireland. I think it's going to be like the last time up in Kingspan. Enya got that kick in the last couple of minutes. So I think it'll come down to the buzzer, and Ireland will win it by one or two.
Very good, we'll take that.
I hope Ireland win. That's and, like, right. And I say hope because it's like, you just don't want any of those silly mistakes, or, I don't know, not kicking the ball out when time's up or something like that, where it just ends up and you're like, oh my god. So if they, and I think this team have learned from those types of things, and they're getting better at managing the game, so I'm going to go with Ireland, but I think it's going to be just by a small score, so 3 points or something.
Yeah, I think Ireland have all the tools to pull off a bit of a shock. I think it'll be high scoring. I think Ireland will get the bonus point, but I think Scotland will score quite a bit as well. So I'd say Ireland by five, but to get 5 points. Maybe Scotland getting two.
Fingers crossed. Well, thank you so much to everyone here at the Camden, Dublin's premier sports bar, a multi-purpose venue, for an exclusive recording with thanks to Guinness. Get the facts, be drink aware, and visit drinkaware.ie. My thanks to Jenny Murphy, Fiona Hayes, Nora Stapleton, and Bernard Jackman.
Thank you.
the Guinness Women's Six Nations Roadshow.
On Off the Ball.
Cheer them on, because the Six Nations isn't over. Visit drinkaware.ie.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with privacy mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again. Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.